Although it's pandemic time, we're going to go to Vrindavan. By sound, by the safe way. Safe way. And we're going to join Krishna in his pastimes with the cowherd boys. There's a series of verses from Canto 10, Chapter 12. Starts with 7 through 11. And the concluding phrase is Krita Punya Punja. Very celebrated sloka, celebrated, often quoted by Srila Prabhupada. So we're going to hear some commentary. Starting with Sanatan Goswami. Krishna was easily realized, Sukhanu Bhutya, as Atma-tattvam, or Brahman, by the liberated, who exist in a state of mere existence, satam. They consider that this bliss is the highest goal. For the devotees, satam, he was Bhagavan, the form of happiness or prema-bhakti, most worthy of worship. For the ignorant, he was that which destroys the jiva, ignorant liberation. Or for the gopis who served Katyayani with great faith to attain Krishna, though this happened in the future, it was discussed by Shukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit at this time. He appeared as a beautiful human child, Nara Dharakena. He appeared in this way to them because of their great prema. He appeared as happiness, Kena, for the groups of women, Nara, Dara. This would be suitable for the list which starts with the inferior or liberated souls and ends with the best, the gopis. Punya, Krita Punya Punja. Punya refers to bhakti, as in Dharmo Mahabhakti Krita Prokta from Uddhava Gita. Dharma is performing bhakti to me. The boys must have performed lots of hearing, etc., as sadhana. They did piles of meditation on the Lord in Satya Yuga, or Krita. They had accomplished, Krita, piles of anurag, punya. The gopis' rati was not fulfilled during the day because of separation, and even at night was not fulfilled with comfort compared to these boys easily associating with Krishna. Quoting Canto 10, Chapter 21, the cowherd girls said, O friends, we do not know any other success for those with eyes than the face of the younger one, between Krishna and Balaram, the younger one who plays the flute. They don't say his name. The face experienced as he cast a sidelong glance of love, the face tasted by people with eyes, as the two sons of Nanda take the cows from the forest, from forest to forest along with their friends. Sukadev desires that the gopis could associate in the same way as the boys did. Thus he uses the word itam, or in this way, in the present tense. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, first he summarizes 7 through 10 and then he goes to 11. The cowherd boys blew bugles to mantaha, made of buffalo horns, chased the shadows of the birds, and pulled the tails of baby monkeys. They would climb the trees by grabbing the tails of the monkeys hanging from the branches. After imitating the funny faces of the monkeys, the boys would jump from tree branch to branch. They leaped after the frogs into the pools of water, which were created by the cascading waterfalls. Upon seeing their reflections on the water, they would laugh heartily. Raising their arms, the boys would shout loudly in a playful mood. Then they would curse their echoes, saying, "Aha! Who is that speaking?" Hearing a single syllable echo back, the boys would become angry. "What is this?" The echo would reply, vibrating, "Ri, ri, ri." And the boys would say, "Today you'll die." In this way they would curse again and again and never come to an end. And then verse 11, the concluding verse of that group. After describing the playing of the cowherd boys, this verse shows the unique good fortune of the Brajbasis compared with others. There are three types of people in this world: Karmis, Gyanis, and Bhaktas. The word Satam indicates those Gyanis who possess some trace of devotion. The inhabitants of Vraja used to play freely with Krishna, who is the source of the knowledge and happiness the Gyanis seek in Brahman. One can understand from this that Krishna's body, which is with which the Brajvasis plays, contains the Brahman. The word satam, or transcendentalist, cannot apply to those Gyanis who think that Krishna's body is material. The phrase dasya gatanam refers to all the genuine devotees besides the Brajvasis who see Krishna as their worshipable Lord. The Brajvasis were so fortunate that they directly played with Krishna, who is seen by these other devotees as their reverent Lord. The Brajvasis joyfully sported with Krishna, who is perceived as an ordinary human, Nara, Darakena, by the materialistic sense enjoyers, covered by the illusory potency, Maya Shritanam. The Gyanis have realization of Krishna, but they cannot play with him. The Dasya Bhaktas, the Lord's surrendered servants, worship the Lord in reverence, but they are not qualified to play with Krishna. The Karmis have no respect for Krishna, so they neither realize nor worship him. What to speak of playing with him? Although Krishna is made of complete bliss, he experienced intense ecstasy playing with the Brajvasis in various pastimes of love. They too attained the pinnacle of joy in his association. Therefore, the Brajvasis were more fortunate than all others, Krita Punya. Of course, this is a material viewpoint. For the Nitya Siddha Brajvasis, Krishna's eternal associates, who far surpass the Gyanis and Dasya Bhaktas, the cause of the playing with Krishna is not material piety, punya. Here the word punya within Krita Punya Punja can only mean activities pleasing to Krishna, by which Krishna comes under the devotee's control. It does not mean material piety or heaps of good deeds. And this verse 11, is referenced way back in chapter 3. This is Krishna speaking to Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house. quote, both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me with eternal prema as your son. And maybe you once thought of me as Brahman, you will achieve my abode, which you already possess. And the commentary, that this is Vishwanath. You developed affection for me as Bhagavan in my Swarup, or as the chief entity Brahman, because I am the greatest, and you continuously meditated upon me. The two modes are seen as equal, just to glorify Brahman. They would go to Vaikuntha, along with Kashyapa and Aditi, who had similar qualification. Sridhar Swami comments as follows, quote, if you were pleased with them, why should they take another birth? This verse answers that they will not take birth in the future. It can be explained that the two should not be considered sadhakas, that's Vasudeva and Devaki, should not be considered sadhakas, and thus there should not be any worry about not attaining the Lord. In Padma Purana Kartik Mahatmya it says, O Parvati, all the Yadus are my eternal relatives. And elsewhere, Padma Purana Uttarakhanda, it says, and this is explained shortly, like Rama's brothers, this Ramachandra, or Balaram, so there's three, the three brothers of Rama, Balaram, like them, the Yadavas appear with the Lord from the Lord's planet by his will, and again go to his eternal abode with him. They are not bound by karma and do not take birth. Padma Purana. Such statements are also found in books concerning Krishna's worship, celebration of his birth, and his mantra. Their appearance now in their original forms and in their expansions in previous births is only a pastime to preach the worship of the Lord with intense prema by showing their prema, which was intense, as that of the Lord. I think it means which was as intense as that of the Lord. In being born as Prishni or Aditi, their attainment of the Lord is not a matter of special sadhana. Rather, Devaki attained the Lord as previously by her very nature. That is expressed in this verse, the Padma Purana verse. You meditated upon me with a special parental love, putra, and with expectation that I would especially appear, bhavena, or with extraordinary love and with expectations of ordinary appearance, brahma, bhavena. I was just reading a very Bhakti Siddhanta-esque purport. Vibrahma Vilas, text 37, is many pages long. And it sounds like it's his very involved way of saying what's being said here. There are pastimes that Vibrahma Vilas. They appear to be, but they're deluding because they only appear to be. So it appears, for example, here, it appears that Prishni, mentioning specifically, and Aditi, they appeared, but their eternal associates. So we can say they appeared. We can also correctly say it's a pastime. Then he quotes chapter 8 of Canto 10. Chapter 8 of Canto 10 comes before chapter 9. Comes just before the Damodar Lila. And it's a wonderful description of the exalted love of Nanda and Yasoda. And after narrating all of that, Shukadeva Goswami says, Maharaj Pariksit says, wow, what did they do to achieve that position? And then Shukadeva Goswami gives this very interesting description of the two Vasus. I forget their names right now. Their partial expansions appeared and merged into the body of to Nanda and Yasoda. Can anyone remember the names? I'll think of it as I go along speaking. And then chapter 9 begins saying, wait a minute, they're eternal associates. So anyway, this is the final verse of chapter, one of the concluding verses of chapter 8. Although Krishna was so pleased with Vasudeva and Devaki that he descended as their son, they, Vasudeva and Devaki, could not enjoy Krishna's magnanimous childhood pastimes. Then going on to chapter 45, Krishna's just killed Kamsa. He's meeting with Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house of Kamsa. And Krishna, Sukadeva says, understanding that his parents were becoming aware of his powers of God, Krishna thought that this should not be allowed to happen. Thus he expanded his yogamaya, which bewilders his devotees. That is to say, they have a sense of his divinity, unlike Nanda. So that's now going back to chapter 14, Brahma's Prayers. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the other inhabitants of Rajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. There's all this, the sweetness eclipses Aishwarya. Explanation with references from the scripture. Again and again it appears. Then from chapter 12, a verse that says, in this way the cowherd boys, that's our verse for this evening, 10, 12, 11. In this way, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence for the Gyanis, desiring to merge into that effulgence. Who is the Supreme Lord for the devotees who accepted eternal servitorship? And for ordinary persons is but another ordinary child. The cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities from many lives, were able to associate in this way with the Lord. How can one explain their great fortune? Then back to the parental affection. Seeing Krishna as their son comes first as the main method, and thinking of him as great is a secondary method. They meditate only once on the Lord as great. Meditated. That's that verse from Padma Purana. The word va can indicate that it may have been possible that they meditated once on Brahman. And from Chandogya Upanishad, later you will go from the pastimes on earth to my abode with the uppercut pastimes. You do not have to depend on sadhana. Doing sadhana would interfere with what is to be accomplished by you as my assistants. The reason is given. You have eternally perfect affection, krita snehao. You too have prema, filled with affection for me as a son. It is your nature in the manner of atma, in the manner of, and this is the Chandogya verse, atma pahata papma. The soul is without sin in the liberated state. I mean, there's a lot there, but the main is the exalted position of the cowherd boys, the exalted position of Nanda and Yashoda, and we shouldn't think of them as becoming Nanda and Yashoda or becoming Vasudeva and Devaki, although the language is spoken, krita punya punja, how many pious activities have they undergone, or how did Nanda and Yashoda get this position? What activities did they perform before? There's Leela, this Vibhrama Vilas theme, but one of the main messages in that long purport of Bhaktisiddhanta is Goloka and Gokula are the same. Jiva Goswami says it. He's the backbone of the Gaudiya teachings in detail. They're the same. There's differences, and there's differences are Vibhrama Vilas, and they're the same. That's his message. I mean, a thread that runs through all of that is Parakya and Swakya, the relationship of Radha and Krishna. They're eternal associates in the spiritual realm. There's Vibhrama Vilas, pastimes that are here. Anyway, it's a long purport. I could read it to you if you want. It's like way up there. Okay, so here's the final section of reading. This is, again, Jiva Goswami making reference to this Krita Punya Punja verse, going back to chapter 6, and chapter 6 is the killing of Putana. So this is toward the end of that chapter. Krishna, son of Devaki, they're in Braja, son of Devaki, the bestower of many benedictions, including liberation, drank the milk of those cows and gopis which flowed with the highest parental affection. Oh, King, these cows and these women who took Krishna as their son constantly were not qualified for samsara, which produces ignorance. Commentary. Two verses clarified the meaning of svargam, mentioned in the previous verse. The Lord gives benedictions, including liberation, to persons with material desires. He gives artha, dharma, and kama, and not his spiritual form. To persons desiring liberation, he gives kaivalya, his spiritual form as unqualified Brahman, with attainment of identity with the Lord without realization of Bhagavan with qualities. Bhagavan gives to devotees realization of his form as Bhagavan, but not his form as a son, which evokes special possessiveness and special prema. He was the son of Devaki by birth only. They didn't have that intimacy of the childhood pastimes, is the point. And he quotes from chapter 8, the same verse we looked at before. Although Krishna was so pleased with Vasudeva and Devaki that he ascended as their son, they could not enjoy Krishna's magnanimous childhood pastimes. But she did not care for Krishna in the praiseworthy mood of Yashoda. And now we're back to Braja. He drank excessively, alam, the milk of the cows and the gopis, which flowed with parental affection. Thus, the cows and gopis are shown to have the deepest and most abundant affection. And then comes our verse for this evening, verse 11 of chapter 12. Neither those who are engaged in self-realization, appreciating the Brahman effulgence of the Lord, nor those engaged in devotional service while accepting the Supreme Lord as Master, nor those who are under the clutches of Maya, thinking the Lord an ordinary person, can understand that certain exalted personalities, after accumulating volumes of pious activities, are now playing with the Lord in friendship as cowherd boys. Samsara, producing ignorance, will not occur for them, since they have far surpassed Gyan. They cannot be touched by samsara, because the pure devotee is most rare. Such a devotee is rarer than the Gyani, quoting Bhagavatam Canto 6, chapter 14. Oh, great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. And now our last paragraph for this evening. They have constant devotion to Krishna as a son. This means that Krishna is constantly with them because of their devotion. Sukadeva addresses the king. Oh, King Rajan, existing with correct knowledge of the Lord, please understand correctly. One should therefore understand that Svarga, mentioned in the previous verse, is a non-material place, since it is modified by Janani Gatim, the position of a mother, which is also beyond the material realm, as explained in this verse. I mean, it's a very lengthy, maybe a little roundabout, but, you know, very devotional way of indicating how to properly understand different words, that in different contexts they may mean different things, and the proper way to understand is this. While I find it interesting that in Tattva Sandarbha, the first section of Tattva Sandarbha is Pramana Kanda, dealing with what is, he says in the Mangalacharna verses, Jiva Goswami says one of the things, he says, I want to talk about Krishna. Before I talk about Krishna, we should consider, on what authority are you going to talk about Krishna? What is the means of knowing anything? What to speak of something transcendental? What to speak of Krishna? So then he explores the means of knowing things, pramana. And the conclusion, of course, is finally, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost pramana. And then that section ends, and he goes into the second half of Tattva Sandarbha saying, okay, here's my methodology. No, he's like an academic person, knows to do this, and he does it. This is my methodology. I'm going to make statements, and then I'm going to support those statements by Bhagavatam, and then I'm going to support the Bhagavatam statements by other statements. And these are the sources I'm going to make reference from. And then I'm going to say some people make objection, and I'll respond to the objection by making a statement referring to a verse of Bhagavatam and other supporting scriptures that confirm. It's very, you know, logical, systematic, and organized. And then he proceeds. And it turns out, at least largely, not necessarily a one-to-one correlation, but his statements are a paraphrase of Vedanta Sutra. So in other words, it's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. It's just really sneaky. Or very intelligent. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is a natural commentary. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining concepts of Vedanta Sutra. But it's not exactly like that, but that's a major element in his construct. So when it comes to how do you understand a word, and you have to take the direct meaning, then you can take indirect meanings if, you know, depending. So there's rules for Sanskrit, and, you know, certainly he and the other acharyas knew the rules. But, you know, words can mean different things, even in any language. They can mean, according to context, they can mean different things. So one of the important messages in this whole 10th canto description of Krishna and Braja is, aside from the sweetness feature of the residence of Braja and how it's super excellent, the nature of pastime is, it's Krishna's way of stimulating the love of his devotees for him, and doing that stimulates his happiness and his love for them. It's like, you know, it's a two-way street. Not just they love him and he gets loved. He loves them and they get his love. It's very dynamic in both directions. And so because it's pastime of exchanges of love being manifest in this world, it's a very important understanding. That's what this Text 37, very difficult, lengthy, high language purport explains, is essentially Goloka and Gokula are the same. And there are differences. And the differences are in this category of Vibhrama Vilas. Vibhrama means mistake. It's one of the four defects of conditioned souls. Brahma or Vibhrama, like big-time Brahma, big-time mistakes or error. And it's pastime. One of the ones that we were hearing recently is when Putana was killed first. She had two younger brothers, and one of them was Bhaka. And Krishna gave his mercy to Bhaka by entering his mouth. That is, his lotus feet touched his mouth, inside his mouth. He gave his mercy. He liberated him. I mean, he still was going after him, but he entered his mouth, and when he entered his mouth, Balaram and the coward boys fainted. In commentaries, this is Vibhrama Vilas. He's omniscient and he's all powerful. He knows that Krishna is omniscient and all powerful. No worries. But his love is so strong, his affection for Krishna is so strong, he fainted. He completely forgot Krishna's omnipotence and omniscience and just passed out. Now there's no Bhakasura in Krishna Loka. There's no fainting of Balaram in Krishna Loka. So there's distinction between pastimes in the two places. The bhava is the same, and it's actually the same. But the display of the pastime is a really profound mystery. It has multiple purposes. One of them is to attract us, you know, conditioned souls, to the wonderful Krishna, where we're getting the picture of his wonderfulness. We're not Vrijbasis. We don't like overlook his wonderfulness and just see his sweetness. But we can get to see the sweetness of the Vrijbasis and how they process his opulence. And so it gives us a sense, it's not just, you know, Lord Chaitanya's opinion or the followers of Lord Chaitanya's opinion. The pages of the 10th canto are filled with, and our acharyas can move very seamlessly back and forth between different references and make really clear. These are eternal associates, so when the word swarga is used, we should know what it means. It means the eternal swarga. When Brahma sees the cowherd boys become Narayan and all the opulences, all the shaktis of Narayan, these are the shaktis of the Lord in the spiritual world. And those shaktis of the Lord in the spiritual world, his shaktis in the spiritual world, have their material counterparts. And like, so they're personified shaktis, which, you know, when we, you know, so we're looking at earth or water or fire, and, you know, we don't see the personification of those things, but we should know behind that is the personification of those things. And then there's like fascinating description of demigods. You know, there's a really simplistic description of demigods. They're controllers of the affairs of this universe. Okay, got it. That's very sensible. But they're controllers of so many things. They're controllers of the senses. And how do they do that? And they have invested powers and so forth. And if they withdraw the power of the sense doesn't work. You can put another machine part in, it still doesn't work if the power of the sense is withdrawn. And the demigods can't do their thing without the presence of Vasudeva. Everything, the whole setup is there, as described in the third canto. And they can't do anything. So they offer prayers. There's a whole long section. They offer prayers to the universal form, and nothing happens. And then another demigod, and then nothing happens. Vasudeva enters, and then everything happens. Nothing happens without the presence of the sanction of the Supreme Lord. And then those demigods have their counterpart in the spiritual world. Like, what's a demigod in the spiritual world? Because demigods are for this place. But there's demigods, and there's prototypes of everything in the spiritual world. And they're all expansions of Krishna. I mean, and that same Krishna from whom everything comes, look what he's doing. With the cowherd boys. It's, and that's the absolute truth. Not appreciated by the Gyanis or the Dasya Bhaktas or the materialists. So when that which they're manifesting here is from the spiritual realm. So when terms like swarga are used, it doesn't mean, you know, the worldly swarga. It means the transcendental one. We must understand in those terms. And with, well, so like, lots of evidence to support. So there's the statement and there's the scriptural evidence from the Bhagavatam. There's lots of reason and logic in stitching it together. It's not unreasonable. It's not dogmatic. It's brilliant. So one doesn't need all that. One can just hear the pastime and it's really nice. And you hear all that and it helps, at least for me, it helps me appreciate it's the real deal. This is the absolute truth. The potency is there and the revelation of the absolute truth is being provided through the verses of the Bhagavatam and the illuminated further by the commentaries of our acharyas. It's like, you know, we're on the right path. And the potency and power of our acharya, it's really a nice purport, text 37. It's too complicated to wade through it in a short period of time. But it's really loaded up. I mean, he says Jiva Goswami is one of the Manjaris in the spiritual world, and he certainly understands all these things. He's authorized. It's not, you know, some people don't understand and some people take a different position. But, you know, that in itself is a mistake because he makes no mistakes. And then goes on to establish and demonstrate why he's made no mistake. And he's a follower of Rupa Goswami, so how could he say something other than what Rupa Goswami says? Very compelling. So Krishna and the cowherd boys. And how fortunate are the cowherd boys to be playing with Krishna the way that they are. Piles and piles and piles of lifetimes of devotional service. Even with the understanding they're eternal associates. So let's see if there's some discussion. 10th canto Bhagavatam. Yeah?
Actually, it's Krishna's mercy. This morning I had the same question in my mind.
Which one?
About the fifth, sixth chapter of the third canto where Mahatattva, which is predominantly the mode of goodness through Jnana Shakti, expands as the 10 sense devatas and the mind, and the verse that we were reading this morning in the Bhagavatam class described how they are an expansion of Krishna. And Prabhupada in the purports talks about the devatas and how they're living entities, but it's explained in the Bhagavatam, as you mentioned, how they have a source, and it didn't make sense. How can the demigods have a source from the expansion of Krishna, and they pray to Krishna the prayers of the demigods? So you answered it. Thank you so much.
There's layers and layers.
But is there a specific, all the demigods have a source?
They have a what?
Have a source in the spiritual world?
Well, I don't know all of them, but the demigods have their spiritual counterpart. Just like Shaktis have their spiritual counterpart.
Okay. Now it makes sense. Yes.
Within Krishna is everything. And this is a reflection of what's there. And so it's there. And this is the reflection of what's there.
Thank you. I had one question about the Krita Punya Punja verse.
Yeah.
I've read that Prabhupada mentions that the eternal associates of Krishna are an expansion of the Sandhini Shakti of the Lord.
Yeah, all of them are.
So
The forms. All the forms in the spiritual world are an expansion of the Sandhini potency.
And because you said the Gokula is non-different from Goloka, all the associates are also expansions of Sandhini Shakti?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like we just heard, the Vrajvasis, all the members of the Yadu dynasty cited, it's from Padma Purana. But as Ram's brothers, Balaram, and the Yadu dynasty members, they're all eternal associates. They're of the spiritual world. And they appear and they do stuff and then they return to the spiritual world.
So the question is, if a living entity becomes a pure devotee one day and turns towards Krishna and goes back to Godhead, will they become a part of Santini or will we remain as Tathastha Shakti?
They don't become a part of Santini. Their spiritual form, this is high technology, 401 technology. The sarup, or spiritual form of a living entity, is like Krishna, Sat, Chit, Ananda. So Sat is Santini potency. Sat and Santini potency are interchangeable terms. It's Sat Chit Ananda. So their form is manifest by the Santini potency. All of everything in the spiritual world is manifest by the Santini potency. It's eternally existing. And then there's Chit. That's another feature, cognizance, and Ananda. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anything? Yeah? How about you? Okay.
So, Maharaj, we see that in Krishna's pastimes, Lord Balaram is at times forgetting who Krishna is, and or his love is taking him over, and he faints, or he goes and thinks maybe Krishna needs help and gets armies together, and
he does lots of things.
Yeah, but when we see Rama and Lakshmana, Lakshmana is Balaram again.
Yeah,
we don't really see Lakshmana doing anything. I mean, at least I'm not aware of where he has. He forgets who Ram is or anything like that. But he's always like, yeah, Ram can take care of it kind of mood.
Two things. There's an intimacy in Braja that doesn't exist outside of Braja. And Lakshman doesn't say, oh, Ram will take care of it. Yeah, he's always his service ready to do, and he won't do unless Ram gives the green light. And Ram checks him if he gets a little worked up and wants to do something impulsive to, you know, which is for the pleasure of Ram. So there's an intimacy. Now there, it's the same relationship because it's the same entity in a different lila. Ram's Leela and Krishna's Leela. It's the same entity, same first expansion. And there's an intimacy in Braja that just doesn't exist elsewhere.
It's because of the intimacy in Braja, it's a little different than...
Yeah. You know, like, Lakshman wants, like Balaram did in Dwarka at the time of the kidnapping of, because we covered this multiple times, expressed by our acharyas. He sent a whole army to protect Krishna, who doesn't need protection. But, you know, Lakshman wanted to do things on behalf of Ram. Just give me the word and I'll annihilate everything. Not like he needs him to do it. But, you know, he wanted to be in service to him. So that's there, the service mood of the younger brother.
Okay. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the very nice reading and the class. Maharaj, in one section, I think there is one line where you read that to the devotees, Krishna is never lost. He's always with them because they're always in devotion. So again, that was for pure devotees and the gopas and gopis and you know, everyone around Krishna. But as if I think of myself as a struggling person who's trying to awaken bhakti in my heart, what are some practical steps that maybe I can set as a goal to have that mood where I can try to, you know, have that devotion always and always feel that Krishna is always there with me?
sadhana bhakti.
So,
and doing what we're doing right now, you know, Shravanam Kirtanam is the foundation of our sadhana bhakti. We can evolve to a higher stage through sadhana bhakti. And that's two parts, you know, the cleansing part and the awakening part. So know, not that you don't know, but know that Krishna prema is already inside and it just needs to be awakened. So what are some practical steps? You know, hearing and chanting nicely, regularly, with undivided attention as far as circumstance permits. Serving, you know, then the other elements of sadhana bhakti. Serving the devotees and worshipping the deity. And, you know, we do the sadhana bhakti elements as much as we can without offense. And good association, sadhu sangha. So so the short is, through the medium of practice, that natural inclination awakens and the covering becomes diminished and cleansed. Sadhana bhakti. That's very practical. Prabhupada would say it sometimes in just like this really simplistic. Just, you know, hear Bhagavad Gita and you'll understand Krishna and you go back to Godhead. 1, 2, 3. Guaranteed. I mean, I've been listening to his recorded lectures on Bhagavad Gita, and he says it often. Boom, boom, boom. So then there's details to fill in the, you know, that 1, 2, 3. But the principle is, Rupa Goswami has given us, under the authority of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, principles of sadhana bhakti. We're to learn those principles and apply those principles in the association of devotees. And especially important is sound. Attentive hearing of sound, spiritual sound vibration. I've been spending some time just sharing with you, spending some time on the topic. I haven't really gone so far with it. Sound covers, sound liberates. And somebody gave me reference to Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, a 5-part seminar that he gave in Russia and that has given in other places after giving it in Russia, on the final verse of Vedanta Sutra says, sound liberates. Shabdat. And I forget, it's with no return. There's the prefix, and then there's another word, of something. Vritti, avritti, shabdat. Something like that. So, sound. There's other translations of the word shabdat. It's the scripture. But, you know, Prabhupada's making reference to it. Anyway, so, and it's said twice. The final verse of Vedanta Sutra says 2 words twice. And that's the final section is the Prayojana section. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. The final is sound liberates. So, get absorbed in sound.
Thank you, Maharaj.
And then you apply it. That's sadhana. You do it, you hear it. It enters your heart and you live accordingly. So the cleansing and the awakening and go to Krishna process. And hearing about those that have such exalted love, Prahlad and Dhruva and Maharaj Ambarish and all these exalted personalities, they're not Brijbashis, but they have pure love. And hear about them, remember them, describe them. Ram's Leela, Sundara Kanda, much loved section. Pure love. It transport you out of the conditioned paradigm into another realm of possibility, and it starts to become reality because it's a natural consciousness. So it's sadhana. Sound.
Thank you, Maharaj.
How are we doing? Anyone else in the room? Or we'll go to online?
Maharaj, I had one question. Before I asked the question, when you talked about the two vasus.
Two what?
The two vasus who merged into Nanda and Yashoda. When you said, you mentioned it's Drona and
Dara.
Yeah,
thanks.
So is the understanding correct that like there was 10 million coward boys and only some of them were Nityasiddhas? Is that right?
Or only some were what?
Nityasiddhas.
Nityasiddhas.
Yeah.
Young people have a way of taking like 18 syllables and making it into one syllable. it's a skill. Okay, Nityasiddhas,
So not all of them were, though.
We don't know, have the count or the percentage or anything like that. Some. Okay.
The online questions begin with, first one is from Sanjay Mataji. And she asks, Guru Maharaj, the name of Krishna is completely pure and it can save us. Does this mean the impersonalists can be saved just from chanting Krishna's name?
Well, saved from what? Without the association of devotees, they can't be saved from forgetfulness of Krishna. When they impersonalists chant Krishna's name, they're thinking something quite different than she is or we are. So they can become pure, they can become freed from material contamination, but they can also make offense. And that's a problem. Okay?
Yep, that's it.
That's it. Okay, that's it. You have something.
No, go ahead. It's out of this session.
Okay.
Maharaj, this maybe how
this is much better than Zoom.
This is probably like a how-to question, but I've been thinking about the answer you gave to Guru Prabhu yesterday about chanting.
Yeah.
And, it was very profound. As I'm in the same boat as him, and it was
mechanical
chanting, and I was trying to relate and try to apply. I was just thinking for myself and questioning myself as to why I am doing mechanical chanting. And maybe the first thing that came up was, maybe I don't have sufficient...
Your phone is causing feedback, that's the point.
Yeah.
Take it away from the technology, just...
Okay.
You got it. You're fine. It's not you. It's that thing over there.
The first thing I was thinking was maybe I don't have sufficient realization that the holy name and the and Krishna are the same. So, like, I was going to ask you, like, you know, what can I do and, like, where do I start developing that faith?
Really simple. He just shut it off over here. Bhaktisiddhanta has a bullet answer. It's not possible for the material mind to understand the name and Krishna are non-different. So, you know, you can try all you like, it's not going to happen. How it can happen, his teaching is, by hearing. And hearing, he uses this phrase, with the spiritual ear. And then that gets into, you know, layers of what does a spiritual ear mean. But rather than, you know, not just with this fleshy thing on the side of our head, the sense organ called ear, then there's the subtle power of hearing that's grouped around the, along with other senses grouped around the mind. There's the spiritual ear, it's the soul. So it takes a lot of effort to hear where it touches the soul. But, you know, the sound is, and the soul are not of the same quality. But we're not hearing like that. That's why it's mechanical. So so there's something that we can do as a you can do, I can do, we can do as a practice, and that's ardent hearing or absolute hearing or just the ear can capture the mind. That's his teaching. And when the mind becomes captured, then it's that's what real hearing is. And when we're really hearing, then it's not mechanical anymore. It's stimulating. Spiritually. So we're not there, but the practice to get there is during the time that you're chanting, it's just one thing. And you have to, it takes a lot of practice and a lot of practice and a lot of mercy along with practice. But just one thing, hearing. There's chanting going on, but chant can go on when you're not hearing, and that's the mechanical one. It's hearing. And then we can realize the name is not different than Krishna. We can realize all kinds of things. So bhakti awakens by that kind of hearing. And when bhakti awakens, then we get knowledge, you know, realization. Beyond, you know, so then the book knowledge becomes something that we can actually experience. Hearing, this is the ear. But the spiritual ear, not just this one. Okay?
One other thing that came to my mind was this discouragement or kind of the thing is, okay, yeah, I'm going to do it for some time. I'm fired up now. I'll do it for some time. Then it's going to go. So the impetus is not so much there that, okay, it's going to go away after some time, even if I put effort. So that kind of discouragement is also there. As trying to seek guidance and see what can be done about that.
Well, that's under the heading of acceptance and progress. The acceptance is, why is it? It's not some, you know, you're a broken person, you're a defective person, there's something wrong with you. It's not that. It's we're covered. You know, there's been different kinds of cloud cover during the past while in here in Detroit or suburbs. And, you know, sometimes there's lots of clouds and sometimes there's not so many clouds. So what are you going to do when there's lots of clouds? You get depressed? You know, it's just there's clouds. There's clouds. And then that wait a while and there's less clouds and then there's clear sky. And then so it just keeps our circumstance, the degree of covering starts, you know, fluctuates to a degree, but you stay, what's needed is you stay fixed in that which is to remove the clouds. And the clouds, in the metaphor, the clouds are the anartas within the heart, the unwanted things in the heart. That's what's causing the, you know, the sometimes and sometimes, you know, it goes up and it goes down. The unsteadiness is anartas. So there's an arjuna vritti process. And it starts with hearing. And then, etc. Pravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smarnam, etc. It starts with hearing. And then application of teachings. And, you know, and there's an unsteadiness in all of that. So it's just part of the, part, one way of saying, it's part of the price we have to pay for our who knows how many foolish free will choices we've made. And we're reaping we're responsible for them. I take responsibility for my mistaken exercise of free will. That doesn't mean it deters me from making the right exercise of free will. Especially when, you know, the hand that's being extended to me is Krishna's hand. It's he who's extending his hand to each of us, and there's so many ways. His teachings, his representatives, his name, his deity form, he's extending himself to us. So that's how you deal with the unsteadiness stage of bhakti. Is accept it. That's what it is. It is what it is. And it's not, you know, like I said last night, it's not like there's something wrong with you, or you're a bad devotee or something. It's standard. Anishtita bhakti is standard. And it goes up and down. And there's different features of that up and down.
When you say acceptance, you mean acceptance of the fact that I am in this unsteady state.
Yes. The reality of my situation is, and I accept it. I take responsibility for it, and I'm determined, and I have trust in Krishna to go beyond it. That my present circumstance is going to incrementally move, and the incremental is going to be unsteady, and that's part of the acceptance too. But that doesn't mean, you know, so, you know, the little simple example is a child learning to walk. The walking propensity is there. Just practice. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chitta sananyagamino. That's what we do.
Just the mind itself becoming familiar with the holy name and just going away.
Well, that's just, that it goes circles back to the mechanical chanting.
Right.
So we can't get to the ever fresh position without the purification. You have to pay the price for your who knows how many mistaken free will choices have been made. You take responsibility for it. Okay. You have something more?
Just a last follow-up question.
To his question? Okay.
Um,
So, Maharaj, how do we factor in the external disturbances that may sometimes deter our bhakti? Like many times I've seen...
Many times I've seen,
today I'm all pumped up and I'll try hard and something happens, like some external disturbance comes in that... I mean, I was hearing you were mentioning about anarthas, which I guess is more within, but how do I tackle external disturbances?
Well, the external disturbances won't disturb you if you're clean in inside. Sure. First business is purification. First business is make the heart pure. You know, you have no control over stuff outside. And, you know, the negative emotions connected with the stuff outside is part of the contamination that's within. Supposing you're pure devotee. Supposing you're a Prabhupada or of that caliber devotee. And something happens that's like disturbing outside. You're in the mood of Krishna's shelter taking. There's nothing that's in it for you inside. So it's not that you'll never find something outside that triggers some emotion that's an unpleasant emotion. That's not the position of pure devotion. But the mind doesn't go anywhere from Krishna. So something that's outside, that's presently triggering a negative emotion or distracted attention to that something, and I want to fix it. It's not about your service. Excuse me. It's not about your happiness. It's about what's pleasing to Krishna. And then listen to Prabhupada speak and listen with the ear that you want to see how he deals with disturbing circumstances in his interactions with others or his speaking to general audiences. The one-on-one conversations or the general, and so there's, you could hear the tone of his voice go up when he would speak about, animal killing. So it's not like, but for his own personal convenience, he accepted so many difficult circumstances without any consideration of, you know, his comfort or convenience, or so he was so locked in. So same for you. He was so locked in to fulfilling the order of his spiritual master. And it took a long time to prepare for that. It's so many obstacles all along the way. And he just persevered and Krishna helped him. Even when it looked like nothing was happening and on and on and on. So, have a mission of life. And what the initial mission, let me make my heart pure. So what's out there, I have no control over what's out there. I have control over what's in here. And just stay locked into making your heart pure. And so things that are outside that are unpleasant or whatever, you know, they don't make any sense. Lots of things don't make any sense and they're troubling. You can't do anything about it with your heart's not pure. And you can do all kinds of things with it, about it, if your heart's pure. I left my phone. There's a really nice saying, Bhaktisiddhanta. No one can hurt you except you can hurt yourself. And you, anyway, it's a longer phrase than that, but dealing, when you have Krishna's shelter, then you can deal more effectively with negative emotions and not be distracted by them. You can rise above them and be an instrument to make a situation that's disturbing better if you have shelter. And that's where purity is found. So that's the recommendation. There's a four-part seminar on the art of meditation dealing with overcoming negative emotions. It's a nice. So, maybe I can remember. Maybe if I don't remember, you remind me and send you some links and you can, the art of meditation, overcoming negative emotion. But it's this principle is when you have shelter, then what's out there that's triggering your negative emotion, you can rise above it because you're connected to Krishna. Now your point is, I want to be and I'm feeling connected and then something comes along and I get distracted and this other emotion it starts to rule. So how do you deal with it? That's your question. I'm trying to give some answers in this seminar. Is focused exactly on that. Okay, online, anything? No. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.